What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Today, I have a good friend of mine on, Casey Johnson from Cody, Wyoming. He does a number of things, but we're going to talk about hunting in grizzly country today because he does a lot of it. And yeah, thanks for hopping on, man.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. Good to be here.
Yeah, so I thought we'd just start out, like, just kind of do an introduction of yourself and what you do and kind of where you hunt.
Yeah, so I live in Cody, Wyoming. I started guiding in Alaska 7 years ago. I went up there as a fishing guide, and I knew it was just a foot in the door to become a hunting guide up there. And so I did that for a little bit and then moved into the hunting guide stuff. And so now we do bears in the spring. We do grizzly and black bear both in the spring. I've done some peninsula stuff up there. Currently, just taking over a bear baiting operation up there. Just got my outfitter's license, and so I'm taking that over. And then in the fall, I'm start out with sheep in the Brooks Range, and then go back to Wyoming, do some elk and mule deer stuff, and then back up to Alaska for mountain goats, and then back home to try and get in some personal hunting for myself before the show season starts. So it's definitely up and back and up and back, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's very awesome to be out there in the wild and get to see all different parts of the country. So
yeah, it's pretty awesome. We took an all night road trip back from the sheep show to Cody one night, and that's kind of where you and I hit it off, just talking about, geez, hunting from one end to the other is just, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And you know, just like that, you know, meeting people and going to the shows and just being a part of the hunting community, it really has just changed my life and opened my eyes to a lot of different opportunity. And it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Me as well. I can relate to that. That's pretty cool. What are the two companies, like the Alaska company and then I know what they are, but yeah.
So Alaska Outfitters Unlimited, Aaron Bloomquist runs that one. Him and I are kind of changing gears and kind of going into some partnership stuff in different areas. And then I'm starting my own company up there, New Age Outfitters. So that's going to be coming out here pretty quick. And then I guide back in Wyoming. I guide for the Wood River Ranch. So we have a place just outside of Cody, just south of Cody, in Unit 63, 62. Do a lot of elk stuff down there. So, yeah.
Wicked elk units, I think. They're full of bears.
Yeah, we're pretty spoiled. We're pretty spoiled.
Yeah, so that whole bear thing is kind of what I wanted to talk about. And I want to talk about the prevention. I think nobody really talks about it till after something happens, and then you just hear kind of the horror story. But I think they do, kind of like you said before we hopped on, like bears, they kind of get a bad rap, and people will just, they won't go just because there's bears there, which I can understand. There's some fear there for sure, but I don't think it should completely keep somebody from going.
No, I agree. I think that there's steps you can take and just be prepared. And, you know, it's just as much for the bears as it is for us. You know, it's not fair for us to go up in there and be negligent and put the bear in a bad situation either. You know, we need to go up there and leave as little trace as possible and be respectful of the woods and all the animals that live there. So, you know, there's policies and plans in place where you can go up in there and you can have a good time and be safe. And of course, you're always going to have the off chance that you're going to bump something or you're going to get in between a sow and a cub. And, you know, that's going to happen once in a while, but you know, it's not the norm and it doesn't happen every day. As long as you have your head on straight and you are paying attention and you have your plan and you're sticking to it, you know, there is a way to be safe up there.
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing I wanted to cover just more off of I think it's kind of intriguing is like the differences that you see in bears in Wyoming, like in the lower 48 and then in Alaska, like how they treat people. I guess.
Yeah. So I've been around both of them quite a bit, and the difference that I see is just the fear of humans. In the lower 48, the bears that I've been around, for the most part, they're not afraid. They'll look right at you and just kind of lumber away, you know, whereas in Alaska, if you come up on a bear, for the most part, if they smell you or see you, they're going to run as fast as they can away from you. And I think that that has a lot to do with hunting, but I think it also has to do with just the density of humans. The bear area in around the greater Yellowstone area, you know, they're running into people, they're seeing people quite often. And so they get kind of used to them in a way, whereas in Alaska, it's so vast. And a lot of the bears that we're coming up on have never seen a human. They just know that that's not right. And that's not something that they want to be a part of. So they're gone. So I think that it has a lot to do with population density as well as hunting them and not hunting them.
I think so for sure. I don't know. When I was filming over there, so I filmed for probably four seasons. I mean, pretty like, you know, back to back hunts for four seasons. And man, we didn't really have a run in. Like there was one time we were in camp. We woke up the next morning and there was some fresh snow and there was bear tracks that went around our tents. Not that close. I mean, 50 yards maybe. So not like right next to the tent, but other than that, like we saw bears, but they were up high looking for moths and we didn't really have a run in, but you know, we always did things like you were saying, safety things to prevent that kind of thing from happening. And things happen, like you know, walk around a corner in dense timber and there's a sow and cubs, like you can't, I mean, there's just a chance that that's going to happen. You just have to be prepared for it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of was going to be my next thing is, I'm sure you get a ton of questions about just what are the most questions you get from people wanting to hunt in grizz country. It's probably, you know, kind of based around fear, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So, you know, a lot of what I see is people just haven't been around them. So they hear all these horror stories of the grizzly attacks and this and that. Well, you know, thousands of people go into these mountains every year and you might have one or two attacks a year. And so, like I said earlier, it's not the norm, but people are just, it's just that chance that that could happen. Well, I could also get struck by lightning or I could also get in a car accident, but I don't go out. I don't not go driving because it could happen, you know? So yeah, it's more so just like not knowing them, just that unknown, not knowing about the animal, not ever being around the animal, is it makes it scary. So, you know, and we have a lot of stuff where we're in Alaska and we're 20 yards or we're 15 yards from these bears, and you just know them, I guess. You get to know their mannerisms, you know what they're, or you get confident with them, and maybe someday I'll get eaten by a grizzly bear because of that. But it's just that unknown. I think for people that get, it's the big scary beast, you know, and once you've been around them, they're not as scary as long as you're paying attention and you know, kind of the big deal. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people ask me, well, where can I go that there's not grizzlies? And you know, there's lots of places you can, but there's a lot of good hunting where it is in grizz country, and you can't let that define your life. So, you know, you don't want to pass up those good units just because there's grizzlies living there. And a lot of the elk units, units in Wyoming definitely have grizzlies in them. So no. I'm not about to pass that
and
up. So
I don't know. Like I said, I haven't spent as many falls in there like as you guys have, but we really didn't have, I mean, there was a lot of days that we were up there and we didn't have a single run in. So it's just like, it's not like you see bears.
On an average year, I only see maybe 6 to 10 grizzlies in a whole hunting season, you know, and that's not to say that they're not more in the trees and stuff, but where we get in the issue and where a lot of the attacks happen is once that animal hits the ground, then you're in more danger, and that's when you really need to be vigilant about paying attention, making sure somebody's watching, making sure that you're not just have your head down going to work on that animal and have that bear come up behind you or something like that, you know. And as outfitters up there, our problem is we have our honey holes, so we go up in there and we might kill 3 or 4 elk in the same drainage. Well, that's definitely going to bring bears in, so then you really have to be paying attention because you know they're going to be there. And like I said, I'm not going to stop going to those honey holes because there's grizzlies there. You know, the elk know that they're there, and they don't usually mess with the elk, with the live ones. You know, they don't run them off or anything. Funny story, 2 years ago, we saw a big bull, and he's down in the bottom of this drainage, and it was the last night of archery season, and I he's comes out right at sunset, and we, there's just no way we're going to have time to get to him. And I said to my buddy or my client, I said, man, where's a grizzly bear when you need one? And literally 15 seconds later, a big boar grizzly pops out right behind this like 390 class bull. And that bull turned around and looked at that bear like at 15 yards, like, what are you going to do about it? And I was like, dang it. Like I was hoping he would run from him. Nope. He looked him right in the eye and just stood his ground. And so we ended up going back to the camp without an elk. So it was pretty funny, but
it's not what I thought would have happened either.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. But I think hunting in grizzly country takes a little bit of extra, maybe logistical planning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, as far as like our setup and everything, you know, we're using bear fences, we're hanging our food, you know, we put up bear fences around our camp at night. And when we're gone during the day, those bear fences are on. And then when we're leaving, obviously at night we're hanging our food up in trees and stuff like that. And that's not necessarily just to keep us safe. Like those bears still might come in, but it's more so to keep the bear safe. You know, I don't want him coming in and eating that food and getting used to doing that and then going into everybody's camp because he got it one time. I want to make sure that that bear's taken care of and he's safe just as much as I want myself to be safe. So, you know, you take those precautions. You know, obviously you don't want to leave trash laying around. We always make all of our clients, even your toothpaste, even your, any of your toiletries, stuff like that, anything that smells, and all that is going in a locked box or it's going and getting hung in a tree. We have bear boxes, we have, you know, bear containers, coolers that are bear proof, that are getting locked every night, that are getting locked if we're gone out of camp, everything like that, just to make sure that they're not going to be getting into anything. So that's kind of our setup as far as that goes. And then as far as like in the field goes, usually we have a dog like too. That'd be another thing I would say, like when we're traveling on horses and we have a big pack string, we usually have a dog out front, and that's not a bad idea. You know, some people don't like hunting with their dog or whatever, but you know, you can always leave the dog at camp or whatever you need to do, but that really, really helps because 9 times out of 10, that dog's going to see that bear before you do. And same with the horses. The horses will usually see it or smell it before you have any idea that there's a bear there.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, we were up east or west of Cody hunting deer, and we were hunting with Josh Martolio, and he said, well, last week, there was a bear that kind of a younger bear that kind of snuck up on him basically, and the dog caught it. And you know, when the dog started growling, the bear was 30 yards behind him. Well, they're all in their glass looking the opposite direction. And I'm pretty sure he thinks that was the bear that was climbing all over that horse trailer. And they ended up killing him, but he thought that was the same bear because that was pretty close to the same trailhead, I guess. It's kind of funny, but
yeah, they're kind of a mischievous creature, really.
Yeah. Let's see. So yeah, camp food regulations, just kind of like you said, we put like everything, vitamins, I would bring wipes just to, they were even unscented, but I would bring wipes to, you know, to like take a mock shower or whatever. And I would even put those away because they, you know, they still have a little bit of a scent to them.
Absolutely.
It would suck to come back and your tent's torn apart with freaking
baby wipes everywhere.
So embarrassing. Yeah. So just, yeah, we always put all that stuff away. But what are, do you know the Game and Fish rules, or I guess it's the Forest Service that has those rules, how far it has to be off the ground and away from the tree?
Well, we have actual poles in our camps that the Forest Service installed. So they're kind of like a meat pole. We have a meat pole that's 200 yards out of our camp. And then we also have one in our camp that is for actually hanging food and everything. And I would say that it's, I don't know, 20 feet off the ground. And I think it's got to be like 6 feet out from the tree. Yeah. You know, don't quote me on those exact, but you know, that like ours is definitely 20 feet off the ground or so. And then, you know, it's 12 foot wide. So we put it right in the middle of that. And we've actually had bears come up and climb on top of our meat pole and try to get to it or reach out and try and get it, you know, swinging so that they can grab it. But yeah, definitely. And that's a black bear, obviously. But now, as long as you do that and you hang it up there in those, then it's not really a big deal. So, and same with like, if we shoot an elk and we can't get back to it until the next day, we'll go ahead and quarter that animal out and hang it up in a tree, you know, out on a big overhanging limb, and then just tie it off. And that way we know that that meat's safe until the next day.
Yeah, that was kind of my next question. What else would you tell people to do with that meat? Like, get it, how far do you try to get it, like, away from the carcass and, like, kind of in the open? And do you leave, like, t-shirts or whatever around it?
Yeah. So I've done all of that for sure. I try to, you know, the more the better, but I try to get it away, you know, leave the gut pile and everything in the wide open, let them get there, and let that be the easy low hanging fruit, if you will, and move your quarters and everything, get it away where that the scent that they're going to smell, and the majority of that scent is going to be that gut pile, you know? So I'll get it away a couple hundred yards at least, and then get it up in a tree. And yeah, I definitely have. I've definitely laid my shirt or hung my shirt in a tree or, you know, whatever, just to put a little bit of human scent out there. And I don't know if that works or not, but I definitely have done that just as a mm-hmm. precautionary deal. But, yeah, I mean, if you can get it a couple hundred yards, I mean, it's better if you can get it out of the field that day, but you know, that's not always the case if you're hunting later into the night and stuff like that. So take what you can, get the rest of it hung up in a tree. And, yeah, just more so than anything is just pay attention. Just don't let them surprise you.
Yeah, I think definitely the paying attention part. It's easy to get, you know, when you're working on an elk, it's easy to get really focused in on that. Try not to cut your finger off. And those bears are quiet too. Like, people think, they're a big bear, you can hear them coming. No, you cannot.
No. And, you know, and another thing that I would say too is, if you shoot an elk and he dies right on the trail, don't leave that elk right there. Don't gut him right on the trail. That's not fair for other people that are coming up behind you that have no idea that that gut pile's there. And all of a sudden there's a bear right on the trail. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have the chance, get it off the trail, even if it's 100 yards, get it off the trail, get it somewhere where somebody's going to be able to see that carcass coming from a little ways away and not be surprised. You know, you don't want somebody coming around the corner and having a bear on a kill, especially, because then they're territorial. That's their kill, not yours. And, you know, you don't want other people getting in a bad situation because of something that you left on the trail. So that is another thing that I would say, get it off the trail.
Yeah, definitely not. That's good. That's a good thing to throw in there. With quarters, like, you know, if we're backpacking and I guess we kill an elk, and we're going to debone it, would you take the quarters off and pack them away a little ways and then debone, or would you just do it right there?
I would try to eliminate any, you know, you don't want to have like another site and then move your meat out. You know, I would get all your work done right there at the carcass and then get the meat away. But yeah, you don't want to like have a pile here, have a pile over here, and then take your meat. You know, I would try to eliminate as much of that scent as possible. Leave it right there at the gut pile.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Dang, what else? Oh, this is a big one. Spray versus like taking a pistol.
Yeah. So I do both. I carry both. I guess I look at it a couple of different ways. I mean, I think that people should do whatever they think they're comfortable with, whatever they think they're proficient with, they're going to be the fastest with, whatever they feel that they can be effective. I feel like I practiced a lot more with a pistol than I ever have with bear spray. You know, I've shot bear spray off a couple of times, but I look at it in the situation where I've practiced with my pistol a lot. I'm very proficient with it. I feel very comfortable with it. I feel like I could draw that firearm and put a good 2 or 3 shots into that bear, knowing with confidence that I'm going to hit what I'm aiming at. But that's me. That's somebody that's been around bears a whole bunch. And that's, you know, when I see a bear, I don't get real scared or amped up. You know, I'm thinking to myself, this is the situation you're in. This is the certain steps that you need to take to get yourself out of this situation. Now, another person that's never been around bears has that bear come charging them, that's going to be a whole different story. They're going to be scared. They're probably not going to be able to be efficient, and all the practice in the world is not going to help you if you can't calm your nerves in that heat of that moment. So, I mean, I've been charged by a bear, and I've had to shoot one before. And when it happened to me, there was at no point during the charge was I like, oh no. To me, it was, here mm-hmm. it is. I need to shoot this bear right now. Like, I need to kill this bear. And I did it, and it wasn't a big deal. But like I say, if you're not used to them and you're scared of them, that's definitely going to be really hard. And that's probably where bear spray is going to help you a lot more. So you're going to be able to spray that spray. It's going to cover a big area, and your chance of turning that bear around is going to be a lot better than if you have a pistol. Now, bear spray mm-hmm. doesn't work every time, you know, but a pistol also doesn't work if you don't hit them. So, you know, it's about yeah. what you're efficient with. And I, like I said, I carry both just in case I start shooting and I don't kill that bear. I still have that bear spray to back me up.
Yeah. I like the idea of both. And that's kind of what I carried up there as well. And I know a lot of people that will only carry bear spray. I just don't like the feeling of only having that one shot.
Exactly.
And then, you know, if I spray him and he, you know, fricking turns around or whatever and gets on my buddy, like then what do I do? Like, I just discharge my bear spray and I don't have anything
yep,
else.
Exactly. Or if you drop it, or if you, whatever, it's nice to have both just in case something goes wrong. If you get tackled and you drop your gun and you have that way, you have a backup. Or, you know, if you drop your bear spray, you still have that firearm to go for. So, you know, it's, yeah, definitely having both is not a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day. We were kind of going back and forth on it. And he's like, well, there's really nothing wrong with having a little bit of, even if it's like false security, you know, just that peace yeah. of mind.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. Which, what bear fences do you guys use?
I'm not sure. They're all just solar powered. You know, we actually take up, we pack in electric fence posts and use those. And that's really nice to be able to move around. And we actually use the same fence. We have a few of them, and we actually use the same fence for our horse pen up there. And then we can move that around. And so that they're not just trampling all the grass, we can move them around. So, and you know, that that's a false sense of security as well, because if a bear comes in the middle of the night, it's going to blow all those horses right through that fence.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm not sure on the exact brand. Yeah.
Yeah. I know UDAP makes one. The only reason I know that is because I saw Nate Simmons using one, and
okay.
he was backpacking in with it. So that's an option for backpackers. But I mean, a lot of, you know, and we did all the horseback stuff as well, but a lot of what people are doing out there is pretty much all on horseback. Just, I think a lot, given how far you go in.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in grizz country, a lot of the time you're definitely on horseback. I mean, in our neck of the woods, it's pretty hard to go anywhere deep without horses. And, you know, if you're going to go back there and kill an animal, you need to be able to get out. So that's, yeah, definitely. But I know that there are some really nice products on, you know, the market that people do just backpack in. And if Nate Simmons is using it, it's probably worth looking at.
Yeah, exactly. what pistol are you taking with you?
So I've been kind of back and forth the last couple of years. I've always carried a 44. I have just a Taurus 44. And I carry it on my chest. That's another thing that I would tell people too, is having that pistol on your chest is a lot better than having it on your waist. And you're not fighting it with your backpack strap and everything else. And if you fall down, you fall on your pistol, you can bury your hands up underneath you and you can have that pistol still protected right on your chest and be able to get to it. But yeah, I was shooting the 44, and actually I went back and forth this season, but I also have a 10 millimeter, and I don't know. I've done a lot of reading, a lot of research on some of that stuff, and you know, just having those extra rounds in that 10 millimeters, I feel like it would make a difference. But you know, five well placed 44 mag rounds is gonna is going to drop and drop a grizzly bear for sure. So, but I would say, I would tell people, just shoot what you're comfortable shooting. You know, you're going to be a lot better with a 45 that you can shoot accurately and you can run very, very proficiently than you are with some hand cannon that you're afraid mm-hmm. to shoot. You know, if you can't shoot it well at the range, you're not going to be able to shoot it well in the heat of the moment. So I would just say, make sure that you shoot whatever you're comfortable with and practice with it. Practice drawing it out of that holster fast. Practice hitting something, bang, 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 you know, get something at close range. And, you know, and a lot of the guides that I know in Alaska are carrying little snub nose 44s or 454s. And their idea of it is that bear's going to be under 20 yards and I'm going to save the last one and put it right in his mouth, mm-hmm. you know? And so, you know, those little snub nose guns, you're not swinging around a big old barrel and you're not, you know, if you're in a fight with a bear, you have that tight little compact gun and it's going to do a lot of damage. But I mean, for the most part, if you're getting charged by a grizzly, he's going to be yeah. really close.
That 10 millimeter, is that a Glock?
I think we
have the same one. The only thing I will say about a Glock is you have to make, especially if you're doing backpack hunts or back-to-back hunts, you have to make sure that thing is clean because it'll jam up on yep. you. I came out of, I think we did like a sheep hunt and then an elk hunt right back-to-back. And I came out and ended up shooting like there was a raccoon or something out at home. And I shot it in that second round jammed because it was just dirty. So just got to make sure that thing's clean.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing. And even with like personal defense and everything, when you're in a fight, you don't have time for levers and racking around in and, you know, safeties and this and that. And that's why that's the beauty about revolvers. You grab that gun and you pull that trigger and it's going to go until mm-hmm. you stop pulling the trigger, you know, or until you run out of bullets. So, yeah, that the revolver is going to be a lot more reliable in a heated situation rather than an auto loader. But if you're going to shoot that semi-auto, you need mm-hmm. to practice with it. You need to be very proficient with it if you're going to go into bear country with a semi-auto. So
sweet. Yeah, totally agree. Well, man, I mean, that's basically kind of, I think we hit it really well. Like you just need to really, you know, pay attention, be, you know, all the signs, be bear aware.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And one other thing that I would say is, you know, if you're gutting an animal or you're working on an animal, you know, don't be proud. Take your time and have your buddy standing there, have your buddy watching. You know, if you have your buddy hold a leg while his head's on a swivel or her head's on a swivel, you know, and you're doing the rest of the work, just make sure somebody's watching. You know, I've been in situations where I was by myself in the woods and knowing that I was going to do, you know, 15 seconds worth of work and then look around and then 15 seconds worth of work and then look around. So just make sure, especially when you have an animal on the ground, make sure you're watching and you're paying attention and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just like we said in the beginning, don't let that fear completely keep you from going out there and enjoying it, especially some of those big elk units. Like that elk hunting in there is unreal sometimes. And
yeah, absolutely. And not every bear's out to kill you. So, you know, enjoy them, you know, watch them, just don't surprise them and, you know, give them room and give them their space and they'll leave you alone and, you know, you don't have to worry mm-hmm. about it so much. So,
yeah, well, just sort of wrapping things up, that bear that you had to shoot, do you mind kind of sharing a little bit about just kind of the situation, I guess?
Yeah. So it was a wounded bear. We tracked in on it. It was right at dark and it was obviously in Alaska and it was wounded and it did the, like you hear the stories of how wounded animals will make a circle and then come back on their track and wait for you mm-hmm. because they know you're coming. And that's exactly what happened. We thought the bear was hit a lot better. It was a really, really heavy blood trail. And so I just figured, you know, I saw the hit and it was with a bow and I saw the hit and I knew that it was a good hit. And then there was lots of blood and I thought, oh yeah. And usually those bears aren't going to go very far. Well, the bear started to go up a hill, turned 90 degrees. And I told the hunter, you know, like, watch out. He's going to be right here. He's going to be right here. And it wasn't 5 seconds later. And I heard him come crashing down the hill above us. And he had gone, turned that 90 and then turned another 90 and then come in above us. And, you know, he was 30 yards charging straight downhill right on top of me. And I just pulled up, and I actually had a rifle in my hand, but I pulled up and shot him with the rifle. So yeah, that's something. Dang. When you're tracking animals, you know, that's the other thing too, is same as if you're gutting one, if you're tracking, don't just be looking down at the ground following blood. You need to have somebody looking ahead of you and somebody looking at the blood. Like, make sure that you have your eyes up. You don't want to just stumble into something in the brush. So,
dude, nice. Yeah. Do you think, like, in Wyoming, a lot of people are talking about those bears are getting used to when they hear a gunshot, they come. Have you experienced that part of it?
No, I guess I've never experienced that. I know that they have data that's proven that they do that. And I've heard of other hunters up around our country that have had that very thing happen, but I guess I've never experienced that. But a lot of the majority of the elk hunting that I do is archery as well. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. You just hear a lot of people talk about that, but we've never had one come in after a gunshot, but
yeah, you always hear the dinner bell idea for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Well, cool, man. Seriously, I appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day and hopping on and talking about it. I think it's going to be good just to give some people maybe some, you know, ease of mind, I guess. Just kind of ease.
Yeah,
their...
just if we can add some confidence to somebody's repertoire and get them out there. And, you know, that's what it's all about for me, is just inspiring people to get out in the outdoors. And, you know, if I can help people at all to do that, then I'm all about it. So, yeah, thanks for having me on, Jordan. Always good.
Heck yeah. Yeah, for sure. What's your Instagram handle?
KCJ Outdoors.
Look him up, and I'm sure you'll answer any questions that people have. And if you're looking for like a hunt in Alaska or a hunt in Wyoming, look him up and he can help you out.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it, Jordan.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to episode 5 of the Rockcast. I actually pulled up a couple of things from the Forest Service after we finished this. And, you know, when you're suspending meat or garbage or food or anything like that, per the USDA website, says it needs to be suspended at least 10 feet high and 4 feet from a post. Or stored inside a vehicle or a bear resistant container. One thing to note too, you know, with like the Yeti coolers or the bear proof coolers, you need to be able to lock those to actually make them bear proof. They have to be locked. I got in trouble for that once. So yeah. And they will take your cooler but they'll give it back too. So just, keep that in mind when you're going into bear country. Stay tuned. Episode 6. We're going to have Robbie Danning back on talking about the Maven S2 spotter and the Nikon ED50. Kind of a interesting outcome from what I thought, which one Robbie was going to choose. So that's coming up next on episode 6. We got more episodes coming at you as well. So hit that subscribe button. Go over and check out the forums. As always, there's a Rockcast section in there that I will start new threads on with every episode, so you can ask questions. And yeah, so hit that subscribe button. Tune in next time. Thanks, guys.